Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, welcome to the 2023 season of ScaryCast. This is ScaryCast Tuesday, and I am Dr. John Stamey. We are live, and we are excited. We got some of the best shows coming up for everybody in 2023, and tonight we've got a blockbuster. So first of all, I want to introduce my co-hosts from somewhere up in the Western Virginia area, the one and only Matt Delf. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm great. Happy New Year.
We are glad that you're here, and thanks for helping us. In fact, you actually introduced us to our guest tonight, so that's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of fun, learn a lot of scary things, I'm going to tell you that. And from Houston, Texas, one and only Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
I'm doing awesome. I can't wait to see how great this year turns out, especially based off last year.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. We're going to be all over the country with Comic-Cons, with podcasts, and it's going to be just the most fun we could have. Tonight, we've got an author, a researcher, and a really, I mean, I just got to say it, he's a really cool guy. I'd like to introduce tonight our very special guest for our first ScaryCast podcast of 2023, the one and only Trey Hudson. Good evening, Trey. How are you doing tonight?
Well, very good, gentlemen. I want to wish you a very happy and prosperous 2023 as we edge our way into this delightful new year.
Well, I believe 2023 is going to be a prosperous and great new year for a lot of people. Not necessarily everyone, but I think it's going to be a really good one. And got a lot of great projects coming up. The plate's filled, can't take on anymore, and it's just a lot of fun. So anyway, Trey, in the green room, you were talking, you said you're doing some brand new research. And I was very intrigued. In fact, I stopped you from talking because I didn't want you to go on. I wanted to hear it live, up close, and in person right here on ScaryCast. So what were you talking about? Please review that for us.
Well, one of the things that you and I were talking about that I could just see your little canine ears perk up when I mentioned it is I've been doing some research into something that is kind of horrifying and, you know, quite uncanny, is we've all heard of animal mutilations, you know, and they have been, stories of animal mutilations have gone back for, you know, decades, you know, accompanying many, many UFO flaps. You hear about the famous cattle mutilations in Colorado and Utah, in places unknown, and they're still going on today. You know, you still hear about cattle mutilations in places like the infamous Uinta Basin in Utah. But there's a very, very disturbing shadow to that. You know, almost as if you had a coin, and this is the other side of the coin. You know, we were looking, animal mutilations are the heads, and now we're going to turn it over and look at the tails, and that's human mutilations.
okay? Please explain, and then when you finish your explanation, I might have something that will shock everybody. It's funny. I'll say this, Trey. You and I seem to run around some of the same circles, don't we? And some of the same adventures.
Yeah, it's some sort of strange, twisted, maladaptive synchronicity, if you will.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about these human mutilations.
The human mutilations. There have been rumors, many years of human mutilations that go along with cattle mutilations and animal mutilations. And the theories are out there. What's causing these? There's been witness accounts of animal mutilations, of the animals being entrapped in a beam of light or being levitated. There's a pretty well known case of in Medicine Bow, Wyoming, where an elk was actually levitated by a flying craft and was found later to be mutilated. But there's very few accounts of human mutilations, and I've heard rumors about them for years. And we've all heard about abduction phenomena, people being abducted by extraterrestrials or extra-dimensional entities and being experimented on. Travis Walton is one of the most famous cases, and then you have the Pascagoula case, the Betty and Barney Hill case, and other cases like that.
Yeah.
But I've heard rumors of actual people dying from this and their horribly mutilated corpses being found. So I started doing a little bit of research, and I found two cases, and they're both rather disturbing. The first case is something called the Lovett Cunningham incident. And it involves an Air Force sergeant who was allegedly abducted by a saucer-like aircraft, and his mutilated body was later found in New Mexico. There's rumors that this case was studied by Project Grudge, which was the predecessor to Project Blue Book, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a document that was generated, about a 600-page document that was rumored, called the Project Grudge Report Number 13. And the issue is there's no actual Project Grudge 13 that exists, and the government denies its existence. The only way that we know about it is from secondhand sources. Conspiracy theorist William Cooper, who died in 2001, said he was tasked with analyzing a copy of the Report 13 in the 70s. And William English, who's a former Special Forces captain, said he was also asked to analyze the document. Both of these gentlemen talk about an account that happened in 1956, which involved Air Force Sergeant Jonathan P. Lovett, who was assisting Major William Cunningham in the White Sands Missile Testing Grounds near Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. So if anybody knows anything about White Sands test range, a lot of really freaky stuff, has been tested there. That some of the nuclear weapons program in the early part of that program were done there. They test a lot of weapon systems out of White Sands, so it's kind of a spooky place. And I don't mean spooky scary, but spooky, covert spooky. And supposedly these two gentlemen,
Trey, I think what we used to call that in the '60s was darky affairs. They were dark affairs, and everybody left them alone, the CIA and the FBI. It's like Maria Beale Fletcher was the first person. She was Miss Asheville, North Carolina, Miss North Carolina, and Miss America in 1963, Maria Beale Fletcher. And she even let those words pass her mouth. Well, I kind of work in the darky affairs department of the, of the CIA. I mean, you can just imagine, can't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, throughout my career, I've kind of brushed against the edges of certain things, and I've been told that, you just don't have a need to know. You don't have a need to know what this is or what it involves, and I'll see a compound with, double rows of fencing and buildings, and I just basically pretended like it didn't exist, even though that I would encounter this, facility quite often, you know, I had to come to a professional realization as far as I was concerned, it didn't exist. So White Sands was one of those places. And both Cunningham and Lovett were out retrieving debris from a rocket test. Now, the rumors don't really say what kind of rocket it was, but apparently it was some sort of military rocket, and it was important enough that the debris needed to be collected. And Cunningham was shocked when he heard a loud scream, and he was thinking that Sergeant Lovett had maybe been bitten by a snake. And Cunningham ran over across a dune to aid the sergeant when he witnessed something very strange. Instead of a snake bite, he said he recounted seeing the Air Force sergeant being dragged by a long serpentine arm wrapped around his leg. Now, if you can imagine something like the serpentine arms or probes out of the old War of the Worlds movie, you know, kind of a serpentine metallic thing wrapped around his leg. And it was connected to a silver desk hovering in the air about 20 to 15 feet away. And Lovett was actually pulled inside of the craft, which quickly rose up into the sky. So the major, you know, he was shocked. Cunningham didn't know what to do. This thing grabbed his subordinate, Sergeant Lovett, yanked him into the saucer, and flew up into the air really quick. So he didn't really have, any clue on what to do. So he ran back to the Jeep, which, you know, quite frankly, was probably the most reasonable thing to do, and he radioed for assistance. Well, being a secure area, security forces quickly arrived, and Cunningham was found to be in an extreme state of agitation. You know, he really wasn't good for much of anything, and he was confined to the base hospital for observation and treatment after retelling what he believed he saw.
Okay.
In a book called Military Encounters, it says that base personnel did confirm an unidentified radar contact near Holloman at the time that Lovett vanished. So you have some independent corroboration there. So we have a missing military member, in a very, very secure, secure part of the base. So search parties were sent out into the desert. And for 3 days, they didn't have any kind of contact with them. They didn't find anything. They didn't discover anything. And remember, this was in the height of the Cold War. You know, tensions were high. People were scared. The Department of Defense was on a knife's edge of paranoia concerning the Soviets. So they had to get this airman back. They had to find out what happened to him. Was this a Soviet aircraft that entered into the restricted airspace? Was this something else? They really needed to know. And one of the greatest clues would be if they could find the missing sergeant. So 3 days later, they found his nude body 10 miles from the site of the alleged abduction. So you have this man's nude body in the desert 10 miles away from where he was taken. It looked like the body had been exposed to the elements for 24 to 48 hours. So about 1 day was missing. You know, he was gone for a day, and then the body was deposited. The report really said, didn't say what happened to the third day. And an autopsy was done, obviously, on Lovett, and it raised a lot of questions. First of all, why was his corpse so severely mutilated? His tongue had been cut out from the lower portion of his jaw, his lower mandible. His eyes were gouged out. And the anus removed, almost with surgical precision. The coroner himself remarked on the apparent surgical skill used to remove the organs, especially that the anus and genitalia had been neatly extracted like a plug, almost like you had an auger go in and remove these organs. Also, the body had been completely drained of blood, but there was no vascular collapse. So the body had no blood, but you didn't have the regular vascular collapse of the veins and arteries like you would see with exsanguination. So, what is this sounding like, that we had, encountered today? It sounds like animal mutilation. So the Grunt's reports 1 through 12 have been declassified along with report 14. So we have 1 through 12 and then 14. But this strange, mysterious missing 13 report has never been found. Strangely enough, it matches, this particular report matches, cattle mutilations here in the U.S. So that was one of the rumored reports that I was able to discover right here in the United States.
Okay.
So
well,
I got a real quick.
Okay, yes, Matt.
I was going to say, what's kind of interesting is the veins collapse after 70% of the blood is drained from the body. So usually you'll still have some blood left, and it's really almost impossible to bleed the whole thing out without the veins collapsing. So I find that kind of interesting. The whole body was completely drained, but yet no vein collapse.
When we were trained as combat lifesavers in Afghanistan, one of the things that we looked for was a capillary response, in the fingertips and up under the nail beds, and the veins would start to collapse. And we had a special substance called Hextin, which we would administer by IV to boost the blood volume. So, for the vessels not to be collapsed is unheard of. That doesn't even make sense.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is if I could give everybody a little bit of a different viewpoint, it's as if the blood vanished from the veins. Is that correct?
I would suppose so. It doesn't match normal exsanguination. The way the blood was extracted is not the same way that blood would be extracted from a wound or a arterial slice or anything like that.
I mean, just how much pain could this guy have been in?
Well, it's like anything else. I don't know if you've ever witnessed, and I don't mean to sound gruesome, but vivisection of animals, for medical experimentation, training of special forces medics, things like that. A lot of times what they'll do is they'll sedate the animal under anesthesia. So the animal is sedated, yet still alive while the vivisection takes place, as the organs are removed or, holes are punched in the artery so the special forces medics can practice patching them up like that. So the animal, never wakes up. So, the horrifying thing is, was this airman alive when this happened? Was he conscious? Was he unconscious and it happened while he was living? Or was it done post-mortem after he died?
I guess we'll never know. Now, Trey.
Well, we hope we never find out, because that would involve one of us getting taken.
Right. Well, and I've got a question for you. Have you ever done any research on implants in people's bodies?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit, not a whole lot, but some.
Okay. Well, I want to. You and I need to meet. Because Dr. Trey Dunaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, he's a fine surgeon from Columbia, South Carolina. He doesn't understand what the two bumps are in my top two bones of my shoulders. And it's not the tibia and the fibula. I forget what it is. It's like, you got your lower arm bone and your upper arm bone. What is that bone called, Trey?
That's the upper ones are humerus, and the radius and ulna are your two lower bones.
Right, yeah. So what are those, and Trey felt them. He said, what on earth is that on your humerus? Because that doesn't feel like anything I've ever felt. Have you ever broken those bones? And I said, never. So I got them. I might not be the only person that's got them. Maybe they're listening. Who knows? But yeah, I've got them.
Well,
I can't wait to meet you and let you feel them.
Certainly two bumps on your humerus are nothing to laugh at. No, that was a bad pun. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
Well, here's the deal. It's like, what can you say? You know, listen, I'm sitting here like a normal guy in front of my laptop with my cell phone talking on my favorite podcast, sitting here having a cocktail, and I'm telling you about these two lumps that a surgeon, an experienced surgeon, can't figure out what they are. There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe joke about them a little bit.
There was one case Angelia was working with. She had video, but she had, what is the device that can detect if something is sending out a signal? She's got some kind of device that she has.
Well, there are several. I mean, one is a tri-field meter. That's what, you know, we use in the field.
You can have a frequency counter. Yeah, she had it to see if anything was bugged in this person's house, and the device was going nuts. I can't remember what it was, but it was going nuts on this guy's nose, and it just starts pouring the blood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would have somebody do that, John. See if anything's sending out a signal.
Well, they already know whatever I know, so it doesn't matter. I don't want any blood, Matt.
Well, we hope not. You know, you were talking about, you know, the implants or the changes, you know, physiological changes to your scapula or your arms. And something that's really interesting is there's a guy named Dr. Gary Nolan, who's a professor of pathology at Stanford. And he has actually been doing analyzing materials from UAPs. And he's done several studies on some of these things. And his main thing he's doing right now is blood analysis to help do some analysis on pilots who were close to UAPs. And he's also started doing some MRIs. And what he found is some of the pilots, military pilots, that were close to unknown aerial phenomena have brain lesions that look like multiple sclerosis. And so there's something that actually causes a physiological change when people are near these events of high strangeness. And we've encountered radiation spikes, you know, with my team. And so, you know, you were talking about physiological changes, you know, with bone structure, like your arms and implants and all of that. So actually science, you know, very reputable scientists are starting to look at this a whole lot more serious now. So who knows, you know, what they're going to find as they travel down this rabbit hole.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis Carroll wasn't the only person that talked about a rabbit hole, was he?
No, he wasn't. And we thought that the Air Force case in New Mexico was horrific enough. And it was horrible. But in 1988, you know, and for those of us that have a little bit of a little bit of gray in our beard, 1988 doesn't really seem like it was that long ago. On the banks of the Billings Reservoir in São Paulo, Brazil. Now, what's interesting about Brazil, been the home of several amazing UAP UFO sightings and events. Brazil had an amazing UFO flap, I think in the 80s, where there were actual craft that flew around shooting people with beams of light, and they described these craft as being box-like. And where it gets really weird is they call these crafts chupa-chupas, which in Spanish means sucker-sucker.
Are you saying a word that sounds mysteriously like chupacabra?
Which means goat sucker. Absolutely. Chupa chupa.
Something like that, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
So in the San Pablo, Brazil province, there's a reservoir called the Billings Reservoir. And a body of a man was found by the police. And it was found a, I'm sorry, it was investigated by the police. It was found by a schoolboy who was walking along the reservoir. And he found what he thought was a dead animal and discovered that it was a man. And the police quickly discovered and made the determination that something was a little bit different about this. Very rumor started to be generated amongst the villagers that something very strange was about this particular this individual. Now, there have been many drownings in this Billings Reservoir, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't too strange to find bodies. But police and medical personnel left at night, unnoticed by the villagers, and the body just disappeared. The military and the police took it. Well, in 1994, some forensic reports started showing up, and was discovered by some UFO researchers. And what came out of those reports very closely mimics the New Mexico case. And the identity of the individual was not released, but the autopsy report was. And there's a series of photographs, and I sent those to Matt here just a little while ago.
And yeah, I was going over that exactly.
This is what the autopsy report shows, and I'm just going to kind of condense it. The eyes were extracted, and the eyelids were cut away. The tongue had been removed. The left ear had been sliced off. Lips and flesh around the lower mandibles and neck had been taken. And a significant piece of jawbone was missing. If you look at the photographs, the tissue around the lower mandible has been removed. When they started looking at the whole body, they found that the armpits each had been punctured by a single hole of 1.5 inches in diameter, and similar holes were found on the arms and legs, where it was discovered that flesh, including entire muscles, had been extracted through these holes. All of these apertures, all of these holes, were the same size as though they were made by the same kind of punch, almost like a surgical punch like they used to take out a biopsy. You remember we had talked about that in the New Mexico case. They found that the holes were symmetrical. So like the hole under the left armpit was symmetrical with the hole under the right armpit. When they went to inspect the victim's internal organs, they found they were gone. The kidney, liver, large and small intestine, pancreas were all missing. And the chest and stomach had sunken inwards. So imagine, you know, a body with internal organs removed, and it just creates a vacuum. So everything is sunken in.
And no
where
lungs.
The navel should be. Yeah. And where the belly button should be, where the navel should be, there was also a hole. And it was determined that the internal organs were removed from that hole in the umbilicus. They couldn't figure out how these particular organs were removed in this way. It was in a way that was not normal. The victim's colon was removed. And a perfectly circular hole was cut around the anus, and the entire colon was removed. The scrotum was removed. There was an elliptical cut removing the scrotum. The penis was stretched out and bent at a 90-degree angle.
That's pretty grisly, Trey.
Yeah.
Well,
there was a hole also, wasn't it, on the inside of the thigh? Was it the left thigh?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a hole, same diameter on the left side of the thigh. When they opened up the head, they listed two items, an unimpaired skull cap and signs of a cerebral edema without accompanying a trauma, which indicated that the individual might have been alive when this was being done.
Well, wasn't alive very long, was he?
Yep, they said that they think that the victim died of a cardiorespiratory arrest brought on by extreme pain. And it also, the report shows evidence of torture. This individual frequented the reservoir oftentimes went fishing there, and he went missing 3 days prior to his death. His clothes were found on the opposite bank of the reservoir in the woods. So they think that he swam towards the other bank for fishing, and he suffered. He was also an epileptic and an alcoholic. So the police and everybody decided that his epilepsy and alcoholism contributed to his death. He drowned and was washed up on the shore. So there's a couple of theories. One theory is that he died a natural death. You know, that he might have mixed alcohol with his medication and swam towards the bank and died of a cardiac arrest. Another theory was that he was murdered for some reason. Why? We don't know. And why would a killer perform such skilled surgical excisions, you know, on the individual without any anesthesia? Or the supernatural, which leads us to UFOs and aliens and all of that stuff. And the big the big question on both of these cases is why.
Well, I guess that's something that we can't really discuss because we don't know. I hope that doesn't sound strange or whatever.
Well, certainly it's food for thought when you're out there walking in the woods by yourself at night, that's for sure.
You know, I was just talking with a gentleman up in Burnsville, North Carolina, and he said, you know, I go out in the woods by myself all the time. And myself and his friend Charlie, who was sitting there, we were discussing the rental of the Burnsville Civic Center. We just gasped. I thought to myself, God, I wouldn't be out there in the middle of that crap by myself. You don't know what's out there in the dark. Come on. But whatever happens, I'm going to go down swinging.
Yeah, I actually had somebody ask me about that, and I said, well, I hope that if you find me, you know, with my rectum removed, next to me will be an empty pistol, you know, where I gave it my all.
Yep. Well, this is just an incredible recounting of some things that are out there. And first of all, got to say thank you very much, Transamerica Life Insurance Corporation, for being our sponsor of ScaryCast Tuesday, and it's been a wide-open kind of ScaryCast, I'll tell you that, Trey. Kylie, now you have been very quiet. Do you have any questions or comments for Trey?
I would say questions in general. I mean, it's probably the same questions you guys are thinking. Like, why in the world would any being take things like that from us, and what in the world would they be using it for?
You know, the only metric we have, you know, is looking at our own culture. You know, we do experiments on animals for medical reasons. We do experiments on animals for, you know, cosmetics and product testing. We do disease research on animals. You know, sometimes we dissect living animals, vivisections, and sometimes we dissect animals after they've been euthanized. So, you know, that's about the only, you know, metric we have, about the only thing we can compare it to. Now, something you have to consider is these beings or entities are probably have such a otherness factor that their desires and motivations can be so bizarre and so strange that we can't even comprehend it.
Well,
so
see, I was thinking about that too, who really knows? Well, yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, and I was thinking of the same thing. But then it brought up the fact that, you know, if they're so far ahead of us and so more advanced, why would they need anything like this? Because, I mean, even if they have technology beyond anything that we could even imagine, you would think that they wouldn't need to do these, I guess, tests or or procedures, or I guess whatever you would call it. Yeah, or like they would just be beyond that point of needing anything from us.
Yeah, you would think. But, you know, the other side of that coin is there's a very rich, you know, folkloric history as well as a reported, you know, written history of, you know, cattle and animal mutilations all throughout North America and the world. So, you know, something's going on and it doesn't seem to be dying down. So, you know, anybody's guess is as good as mine.
All right, well, now Trey, I've got maybe a question, and you can elect not to answer it, but, I mean, the only thing that I know about extreme pain is that it seems to generate adrenochrome.
Correct.
You familiar?
Yes.
So,
well, I think I know where you're headed.
Well, I don't know where I'm headed. I just know that I wanted to throw that out, and did you perhaps have a comment? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of crazy.
Well, you know, the adrenochrome theory, which is a very good one, is, you know, certain substances are generated by the human body under extreme stress and pain. Is if I wanted to put somebody in extreme stress and pain, that's not exactly the way I would do it. You can do very, very horrific nerve induction pain, you know, and not cause any kind of external wounds. I don't know if you've ever had a spinal tap, but if the needle happens to brush up against your spinal cord, the pain is pretty excruciating. And that would leave nothing more than a tiny pinprick. So, you know, why remove the organs when I can cause extreme pain, probably much to a much, much greater degree, without all the fuss and muss? So, you know, and of course, one of the, you know, another really crazy theory is maybe we taste good. Maybe it's their version of kidney pie.
Didn't even think about that. Or
neither did
another version of that. Is it's just could be fun to them, I guess, too.
Perhaps.
Well, it could, you know, it was basically, Kyle, you're saying sport.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much.
Well, whatever.
So if you see you ever, you know, out cruising around and you see an alien coming at you with a bottle of A1 sauce in one hand and a scalpel in the other, I suggest you run.
Okay. I'll take your advice on that one 100%. Matt Delph, will you take Trey's advice on that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. This is interesting that you mentioned, especially the adrenochrome. Now, the adrenochrome, doesn't it absorb, like, go through the veins into the blood system?
That I'm not sure of.
Because, you know, they've always said that, you know, the conspiracy about the adrenochrome, that people take it,
mm-hmm.
like the Fountain of Youth, and they get, right before death, they get people so in so much pain and scared that adrenochrome, it pumps through the body, and so, therefore, they will take it for, like, the Fountain of Youth to help keep them young because, like you've heard, the blood is the life. And it's kind of interesting that you talk about all this because everybody knows I've been doing a lot of research on the vampire stuff here lately. And in a lot of vampire cases of supposedly true vampires, which kind of makes me think these things, there's probably something real about these from the folklore, but there was always cattle mutilations and stuff before the actual people started coming up missing, and that vampires supposedly would make weird cuts, pull the eyeballs out, do this stuff to throw people off from hunting them down. And you talk about the adrenochrome, Well, if they torture, they do something like that. Of course, vampires known for living a long life from the source because blood is the life. And it was interesting because I've talked about could these vampire things be a possible alien?
Sure, sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are historical accounts, no kidding, historical accounts, and one of the best ones is a Hungarian Countess Elizabeth Bathory.
Bathory.
You know, the Bloody Countess, and she would torture and mutilate her servants and bathe in their blood to try to keep her youthful beauty, that she felt there was magic and a life-giving force in the blood. So, you know, this isn't mere speculation. There are historical accounts of people that have actually done this.
And what was kind of interesting was, of course, we know Dale Houston. He was telling me when he was on tour, this probably about, I think maybe 2 years ago, maybe three, that there was one spot out in Colorado that he was asking some of the locals, because you go through stretches through out west, and that, you know, they couldn't, he's like, well, you know, should I need to fuel up or I need to get something to eat? What about these places? And all the locals in this one town warned him about this other place. They said, do not stop there. And he said they were dead serious. They said the area was just the town that they've ever seen from dusk till dawn. They said it's the real life from dusk till dawn in that area. So, you know, kind of laughed. He wouldn't stop there, of course, but he kept traveling past that place. But then I had a friend that I went to high school with. He had questioned me the other day that his parents, I believe when his dad was in the military, he was stationed somewhere in Colorado, that they would ride around on these back roads, him and his wife or my friend's mom. They'd leave the base, and they'd go riding around these back roads, and they come across a bunch of farmers that were mad because they thought military could have been doing it or whatever, but they were having cattle mutilations, and they were, and this was in Colorado, and they were highly upset, and he didn't know anything about, you know, the whole vampiring thing. But he was just telling me, he said that, and couples were going missing, several reports like that in this Colorado area. So it's definitely, he definitely gave me another approach on this whole vampire stuff to look into now.
Right, and, you know, human mutilations and exsanguination, the vampire folklore might be a, you know, a medieval interpretation of something much, much different.
Exactly. Exactly. Interesting.
Because normally what you can see and understand from anything is based on your own personal experience. And psychologists
yes.
know that for a fact. So, I mean, so what they, you know, what they think might have been going on was based on their experiences, and it might have really been something else, but they didn't know what to see. Who knows?
Yeah, as weird as it sounds, it would fit into their normalcy bias. You know, folklore talks about vampires. So I find a body drained of blood in the Carpathian Mountains, ergo it must be a vampire. But it could have been something else.
Yep. Or vampires could be an alien.
Ah, yeah, there you go, Matt. Take some of the earliest representations of vampires in film, which was a 1920s German film, Nosferatu.
Yep.
What does he look like?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, Trey, let me put a word in your mouth here, and you might like this. In my book, Look Up in the Sky, you look at the Scream by Edvard Munch. And what did he draw? He drew a 4'3" tall space alien.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that? He drew a space alien.
That's from
the
Scream, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that is the Scream. And then you look at Nosferatu. You got like maybe a 5.5 foot tall space alien. I mean, you know, who knows? I just
well,
have
to
get in there with that.
Okay, well, look at the representations of Aleister Crowley's Incantation of Lamp.
I'm sorry, say that again. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley, and I'm trying to remember the years. I can't remember if it was the 30s or the 40s, but he did a incantation. And part of this incantation, he contacted a creature, manifested a creature named Lam, L-A-M. And it was in, I believe, in 1946. And if you look at a graphical representation of Lam as drawn by Aleister Crowley, it basically is a gray. But at that time, nobody knew about grays. There was no – grays were not in our culture, were not in our cultural lexicon.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at a
great stuff here on Scary Cast.
Yeah, so, you know, if anybody's interested in that, go just look up Aleister Crowley or Crowley in Lam, L-A-M, and I just pulled it up here, and if that thing's not a gray alien, I don't know what is.
Now, this is what's interesting, too, was, okay, when I was in New Orleans here, what, 2 weeks ago? The
yeah.
locals told me that there were two kinds of vampires. They said they are real. They said there's two different kinds. There's the type that is born that is naturally a vampire, which I'm now thinking is probably the alien type, this mm-hmm. alien form, this alien being. Then they said the ones you got to watch out for, though, are the ones that have been turned into a vampire. And they said that a regular vampire, to be a vampire, you know, they're born a vampire. It's, but they, if they feed on a human for 7 days, that they would change into a vampire. But they said that they are the ones that they change are more dangerous because they are human form. They look just like, you know, we do, and you can't really tell if they're a vampire or not. So there's a huge difference between the original vampire and this human form that's been changed.
So basically the hunters walk among us.
Exactly. And that's the ones that have been changed. Now, the ones that are originally born vampire, I'm going to guess they're probably like the Nosferatu-looking thing or alien-type
mm-hmm.
form. They don't look human. Like they said that the ones that are hard to tell or that you wouldn't know of being a vampire are the ones that are human that have been changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if, yeah, there's a, I got a lot more investigation to do now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very
it's
interesting.
Not what one would have expected on Scarycast tonight. Very interesting. Very interesting discussion, Trey. It really is. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, to change topics just a little bit, because I really enjoy hearing your stories about going out with your team in the woods, so to speak, and finding what you can find. Do you mind sharing a story or two about that?
Oh, I mean, I can share several. You know, there's several areas that we research and we, you know, we work with other groups. And one of the stories that I'll share is one that actually happened to Matt and I two different occasions. Is there's an area in Georgia down near, not too far from LaGrange, which is, you know, kind of on the western edge of Georgia, not too far from Alabama. And Matt and I and some other people were doing some research down there, and that area had been known for Bigfoot.
Okay.
And Matt and I took a team out, and we're moving down a very narrow logging road. And he and I both saw a shadow figure dart across the road. And, you know, I don't remember who saw it first, if it was Matt or I, but you know, one of us said to the other, what did you just see? And it's like, oh, I just saw a shadow move across the road. And so we beat feet up to where we thought the thing was to see if there was a trail or something that it could have come out of or gone into, and there was nothing there. And then coming back, we noticed at the almost the exact same location a very pungent, what would you say it was like, Matt, that kind of sewery smell?
Yeah, it was kind of like a human waste, a putrid, nasty smell. Had filled
yeah,
the air.
Kind of like a, yeah, kind of like if you've ever had your septic tank overflow. You know, it's kind of that kind of smell, just really nasty. And,
we did,
you know, we never – well, go on, Matt.
Oh, I was going to say, and what was – whenever we seen it, because you're like, did you just see? And I said, I seen something dark and as it went across the trail. But when we got up there, we even used thermal to look to see, you know, if this being – had left, you know, a heat signature, because usually it would, you would have, even looking through thermal, you could see where a footprint or something if it happened immediately, and there was nothing.
Mm-mm. You know, and it was, you know, lack of a better term, a archetypical shadow person is, you know, is what it was. So, you know, fast forward several months later, we went out back out to the same location, and we had a little bit bigger team this time. And what we were going to do is move up the same road, and we were going to send one team up a side trail and set up what we called in the military an LPOP, a listening post observation post. And this team was going to quietly set up on this perpendicular trail off of this main logging road. And the other team was going to go up the road a while and continue their operations. And you were with the team that went up the road, Matt, so I'll let you – and Sean and I were the ones on the LPOP. So I'll let you tell what happened on your end.
Okay, so we get to the end of the road, and so we're waiting for a little bit. And we try to radio you to let you know that we had made it. Because you were team two, correct?
Correct.
So we reported to base camp. We were in location, and we tried to report back to you, but we had no radio signal to you. We had noticed the radio signal was out to you, but you were closer to us than base camp,
mm-hmm.
which didn't make sense.
Right.
So we waited a few minutes, and we kept trying to radio with no reply, and then we started heading back. As we were heading back is when right next to us, we heard what we call what the bomb, and a tree fell. So we were trying to, we didn't know if you guys were in distress or what was going on. So we were trying to hike back to you as quickly as possible. And, that's when we made it to that one point, and we finally got radio contact with you.
And about the time you were that was going on is I was looking down the trail back to the logging road, and with my naked eye, I could see a very faint, what it looked like with the naked eye was a very faint lantern kind of dancing around. Now this was a time of year where you have no lightning bugs or fireflies. They, you know, they just weren't out at this time of the year. And luckily for me, I have a set of ANTVS-7 night vision goggles, you know, military grade. So I brought those down and I looked, and as plain as day, because this amplified all ambient light, is it was an orb down at the end of this trail, about 18 inches in diameter, and it was about 7 to 8 feet off the ground, meandering in like a figure eight, just kind of floating around. And I could clearly see underneath it. I could see to either side of it, and I could see beyond it because this particular piece of equipment lights up you know, the surroundings, almost like daylight. And so it probably was the best orb that I've ever seen, primarily because I was able to see the surroundings in such clear detail with that night vision. And, you know, it goes back to what you always hear about is folklore of lanterns or lights in the woods, will-o'-the-wisp or jack-o'-lanterns, you know, floating in the woods. And so we actually saw it. So as Matt and his team started making it back to us, something was moving in the woods, paralleling the road they were on, almost like it was kind of keeping up with y'all from a distance, right, Matt?
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Say, I'm going to stop you, and I'm going to say that's a very disquieting thing to hear, is that you're being followed, as we said, in the mountains. Please continue.
Since, you know, we're country boys, too, we were hunkered down as Matt and them were being followed. And our idea was, as their team came back, if something stayed up in that wood line and was trying to, you know, what they call a handrail or, you know, or follow them, paralleling them, is that whatever it was would run into us because we had a listening post, observation post set up. And the individual I was with was a former Marine infantryman. And he and I both agreed what we heard sounded like a military patrol coming up to us and detecting an observation post. And you work, whenever you do that, you work around it. You know, you give it wide berth. And we heard whatever it was stop and then start working its way around us to give us a wide berth. And, of course, we had thermal and night vision. We were not able to see any. But that was just one really interesting evening that that we had out there at that location.
Now, when we got to the point where we had stopped and we set up our location observing is when we started seeing small lights coming through the wood. We were seeing small, and it wasn't the lightning bugs or anything like that. These were they were totally different. It was I hadn't seen nothing like that before. And they were like all around us. They would come and then they would move around, and it wasn't like a flashing light or anything like that. It was one constant light that was lit up, and it was going around us. And another interesting thing that happened was a huge storm had come just as we were coming out of the woods. If you've ever watched the Missing 411, anytime all these missing people reports happen, there's always a huge, some kind of climate change happen right immediately after that person goes missing or during that person goes missing. Because we had a huge thunderstorm right after that, lightning and everything.
That's right. We just did make it back to camp before we got hammered. That's right.
Yep.
Okay. Now that's, again, that's very interesting. And now Trey, I'm gonna pop up. Okay. First of all, Kyler, do you have any comments? Because then Trey, I've got my $64,000 question for you. Will you be ready after Kyler makes a comment or a question or a statement?
That's fine. I might have a 37-cent answer, but we'll give it a go.
Okay.
Now, John, go ahead. I've actually been listening this whole time intently. Like, I don't even know what to think right now.
Okay. Neither do I. You know what? Neither do I sometimes, but I just have to get something out there on the table. All right, Trey. John LeMay, my very dear friend, and I, he's the most prolific paranormal author in the country. He's got over 45 books on UFOs and the paranormal. And I am satisfied to tell everybody that he and I are co-authoring a book called Bloodsuckers. And I was wondering, I have an interview with the great Elijah Henderson. I have an interview with Robin McRae, the great Bigfoot experiencer. I've got an interview with Kyle Peckham, my good friend who has seen more stuff than you'd believe. And I was wondering if I might do an interview with you next week to get your take on some of this stuff, to add this to the material that we've already got, because all I got to say is my chapter better be authoritative, and it better be as good as it can be, or I don't want my name on it, and neither will John LeMay. So can we arrange a time that you and I could have a little interview next week, maybe?
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, by the way, just so that you know, after the show, I will call you and fill you in on that. But that would be wonderful. Now, Matt, you better go do a little bit more research on the vampires, because I'm going to have to hit you up next. And we got to get this done by the end of January, or John LeMay is going to disown me. And I don't ever want to be disowned by a colleague. Trey, I think you know this. You got to really work hard to make your colleagues, your research partners happy, don't you?
Yeah. Usually that's why with Matt, I carry around some Coca-Cola and Reese's peanut butter cups to keep him happy.
Hell with that. I mean, he's about as much trouble as they come. But that's okay. We still like him. Well, I'll keep the Reese's peanut butter cup too. That's great. So I guess what I'll say is we're about at quitting time for ScaryCast tonight. This is interview or part two of many parts. Is that okay, Trey?
Oh, absolutely. I love talking to you.
I do too, and it's like I have a very close friend, Spencer Fisher. Oh, I got an interview with him too. Spencer Fisher is the guy that has – I don't know if you know this or not, but Spencer Fisher is good friends with the Indian tribe that lives right next to Skinwalker Ranch.
That's right.
And guess what Spencer Fisher has done twice in the last 5 years that nobody else has ever done? I bet you can guess, can't you?
Yep. He was able to access some of the sacred tribal areas.
That's right, because he's going there with the tribe, and I'll tell you what, it is wonderful. And in fact, Trey, I think the next time we have you, maybe in February, I ought to have Spencer Fisher on. Don't you think that would be very interesting?
I think so, especially with some of the some of the similarities between events in the Uinta Basin and the area that Matt's very familiar with and I am, called the Meadow.
Right. So I mean, all I got to say is, the reason that I love ScaryCast, this is my favorite. Monday night and Tuesday night from 9 to 10 o'clock are my favorite times every week, because we truly have, and Matt, I think you'll agree, we have some of the most interesting guests anybody could ever have. Don't you agree, Matt?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't know what to say, but I'll just say it's a lot of fun, and Trey, again, you have gone above and beyond the call of duty to produce some spectacular stories that we feel are quite true. And you're a good researcher. I mean, I'm just going to go. I'm going to brag a little bit on myself for a second. Along with a PhD, I have 64 published journal articles, and I was known when I was in the research business to get to the bottom of things. And I think that you, and with the help of Matt and the other people on your team, are trying to get to the bottom of research questions that are terrifying. Do you agree with that statement?
Absolutely, and we are getting ready in 2023 to go to some amazing new places with this. So I'll just kind of leave that little teaser out there for everybody.
Okay, well, I might have a place for you, because you know what, I tend to collect friends, and I was on 10 acres yesterday outside of Conway, South Carolina, that terrified me. And let me ask you this question, Trey, point blank. Have you ever been scared to death?
I have been extremely unnerved, but never terribly terrified. It's probably the thing that unnerved me and kind of wigged me out the most was the mysterious businesswoman that showed up at our campsite that one time.
That was very strange. It's almost like she was deposited outside of a UFO, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, she fit the typical, man in black or woman in black, matrix. And it was just so bizarre and so odd. It was so uncanny and unnerving and had just pretty much the whole team on edge.
Well, I can tell you, and this is the first time I've told where I was last night. I didn't even tell my cousin who's sitting here. He didn't know where I was. I just told him I was late getting in. I was out doing some recon at a terrifying location, and I know it's terrifying. And that's the whole point. It just really scares me. So, when you're scared, you know something. If you're an experienced investigator, like I think all of us are, you know that when that terror button hits, something's out there. Do you agree, Trey?
Yeah, something's getting ready to happen. Absolutely.
Or it's just sitting there. And I'm going to tell you what, I realized I'd left my bank bag in that pickup truck. And, Buddy Rowe, I was not going out there by myself and without the dogs. I'm telling you.
Yeah, it was probably an alien gray, like I said, standing out there with a scalpel and a big bottle of A1 sauce waiting on you.
Probably a bottle of bourbon for me, but that's okay. But look, so all I got to say is Trey, this has been another magnificent ScaryCast podcast. Everybody go to ScaryCastPodcast.com while you're already on it. So that's great. Please enjoy all of our shows. We appreciate every one of you being on here tonight. And Trey, we'll ask you back in February. And I'll get Spencer Fisher back on because Spencer Fisher is one of my favorite people in the world. I gotta tell you something funny. I was on the stage with Mike Barra from Ancient Aliens. That name may ring a bell. So I'm standing up there with Mike Barra, and we're doing a panel discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mike and I were table buddies. You know, he had his books on one side of the table. I had my books on the other side of the table. And here came this gentleman and his wife just making a beeline. And I said, oh, they want to see Mike Barra. They sat down in front of me. And that's how we became very close friends because Spencer has got a lot of stories, and I want you to hear some of them. So anyway, I want to thank everybody involved that we've had another blockbuster first show in January 2023. The legend continues with ScaryCast. So I want to say thank you, Kyler. We appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Wouldn't miss it.
You better not. Or I'll call and yell at you. Matt Delf, can't do this without you.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it.
Well, you could say a little more than that, but that's okay. I'll let you slide tonight, okay?
Well, I mean, no, I love it. I mean, I love doing it. Topics, everything.
I got news for you. This is what I live for every week is Monday night ScaryCast and Tuesday night ScaryCast. It's the most fun. It's the most legitimate fun that Dr. John Stamey can ever have, and I love it. And we have had one of our favorite guests on tonight who's had incredible stories, scared me. I'm going to lock my door and get the knife out. Might not do any good, but that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to stay safe. So Trey Hudson, author of the Meadow View Project, is that correct?
The Meadow Project, Exploration into the South Skinwalker Ranch.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. I apologize. I seldom get facts right, but I like to at least get them presented so that the people can really talk about them. But anyway, I want to thank you so very much. We'd like to have you back next month with Spencer Fisher. I'll have him here, and he there you go, buddy. It's going to be – this will be one for the ages. So anyway, thanks a lot to everybody. Another great ScaryCast.
Thank you.
For the ScaryCast Tuesday for the record books. And I'll talk to everybody next week on the one, the only ScaryCast. Thanks very much. And let me see if I can even find my you know what I love? I love it when my computer restarts in the middle of a podcast. It's like, how can I find the podcast again? But thanks very much. Everybody, we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. ScaryCast. There's only one. Thank you.